Alvaro Uribe Vélez may well be considered one of the best presidents in the history of Colombia. When he took office in 2002, the country was faced with pervasive poverty and a decades-long war with the leftist guerrilla group known as FARC and a number of right-wing paramilitary groups as well. His presidential mission was to rescue his country from becoming what some international observers had classified as a soon-to-be failed state. By most measures, he succeeded despite scandals in which members of his administration were accused of colluding with paramilitary groups. Mr. Uribe has written a memoir called No Lost Causes, in which he recounts his personal and political life. It's published by Penguin Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought President Alvaro Uribe to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. It is a great honor for me to be here, and my gratitude.
I'd like to start with a look at the situation in Colombia today. Your successor, Juan Manuel Santos, is expected to carry out peace talks with FARC beginning this month in Oslo, Norway. You've criticized this move, calling these talks dialogues with impunity. Can you explain that?
Yes, everyone wants peace. I want peace. My administration was getting peace for Colombia. I disagree with President Santos' talks. Not because I disagree with talks, but because I disagree with impunity. For instance, in the pre-agreement they have signed with the terrorist group FARC, they concede FARC impunity, right for members of FARC to be politically eligible. However, they have been found guilty of kidnapping, of atrocities, of crimes against the humanity. And they are going to discuss with FARC some very crucial points of the national agenda, such as land reform. Colombia is an open democracy. In an open democracy, you have institutions to make decisions on the course of the country, and you cannot change institutions for dialoguing with terrorists.
But hasn't FARC been rendered relatively toothless in recent years? They come into these negotiations weakened an awful lot. Negotiations 10 years ago might have been quite different.
Of course, our administration advanced a lot. Our administration dismantled the paramilitary organization, and our administration debilitated FARC and other guerrilla groups. However, during the Santos administration, there have been some setbacks in security because the government has placed all the interest in negotiating with these terrorist groups instead of continue placing all the interest in security, as our administration did. And I speak about this because the success of our administration was the main determinant for Colombians to elect President Santos.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who just won a fourth re-election term and whom you initially had a cordial and some might say friendly relationship, is involved in brokering these negotiations. You've criticized him fiercely for providing a safe haven in his country for the FARC guerrillas.
Of course. We had all the evidences. We brought all the evidences before the Organization of American States. And I cannot understand why President Santos, who by then was our Minister of Defense, has no longer continued with this case before the Organization of American States.
You think he's been too friendly with Chavez?
And he was more radical against Chavez. Therefore, it is understandable this brusque change in President Santos' mind before President Chavez. And President Chavez has passed because of President Santos for being the terrorist group accomplice to becoming the promoter of peace in Colombia. And it is totally unfair.
Well, maybe we should backtrack a bit because there are listeners who probably aren't familiar with the history of FARC. It began as a leftist group, a revolutionary group, and then to some degree, didn't it just degenerate into a group that was involved in the drug trade? Or did they still maintain their mission of land reform and help for the indigenous peoples?
Every terrorist group has its own excuses, ideological excuses. FARC is no different than Al-Qaeda. If you look at Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda has all the excuses for them to try to justify their crimes, the same FARC. Of course, when FARC began after the victory of the Cuban Revolution, at the very beginning of the 60s of the last century, FARC began as a Marxist-oriented communist guerrillas. Step by step, they became a terrorist group involving narco-trafficking. Today, FARC is the biggest narco-trafficking cartel all over the world. For I disagree with President Santos when he stated 2 weeks ago here in New York that he needs the alliance with FARC to dismantle narco-trafficking.
But haven't similar arguments been used in Afghanistan when it suggested that negotiations be done with the Taliban, who are also, by the way, engaged in drug trafficking?
I don't oppose to negotiation, but the only outcome of any negotiation with this kind of group is that the group admits to submit itself to the Justice Administration. And in the balance between peace and justice, if you have to assign them shorter sentences, even parole, I don't disagree. But I disagree when you have to give them, as President Santos has offered, totally impunity. And you cannot convert the Al-Qaeda members in United States legislators, as President Santos is promoting with FARC in Colombia.
As you pointed out, he was your defense minister, and I'm assuming you thought he was going to continue your policies. Instead, he's going to have talks with FARC. He talks about restitution of land to victims of guerrilla violence, elimination of constitutional clause that gave military courts initial jurisdiction over all crimes committed by security forces. And you've been very public in your criticism of his policies. Have you spoken with him about your disagreements?
I spoke with him at the very beginning of his administration. And in one very, very difficult issue, I asked him, Mr. President, if you are going to introduce this bill of law, please remember not to put at the same level the Colombian soldiers and policemen with terrorist groups, for instance, to repair the victims, because my administration introduced a policy to repair victims in Colombia, but establishing the difference between the military and the terrorist groups. And his answer was, no, I have already changed my mind. Therefore, with this kind of answers, it is very difficult for you to continue in this dialogue.
I'm talking with the former president of Colombia, Álvaro Uribe Vélez. His book, No Lost Causes, is published by Celebra. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopez. Celebra is an imprint of Penguin Press. Well, let's talk about what you just mentioned. During your 8 years in office, you carried out negotiations with paramilitaries under the Justice and Peace Program, which demobilized the United Self-Defense Forces, or the UAC. They were granted reduced prison sentences. Well, AEC, I'm sorry. They were granted reduced prison sentences for turning themselves in, among other things. But weren't those people also terrorists and drug traffickers?
Of course. Of course they were. And we offered the same possibilities for them and for guerrillas. And the outcome was that while we demobilized 35,000 members of the paramilitary organization, at the same time we saw the demobilization of 18,000 members of guerrillas, but without impunity, without granting them political rights for criminals to be politically eligible. And of course, our policy, because our policy had 3 points. 1 point, authority with democratic approach. Second, generosity for those wanting to reinsert without impunity. And third, to advance in social policies for the youngsters not to be attracted by terrorist groups to be recruited.
Well, how is that any different than what Santos is doing with FARC?
A lot of differences between Santos has advanced in this dialogue, and at the same time he has forgotten the policy of security. This morning in Colombia, 3 soldiers were injured by FARC, and the only topic the government speakers at this moment on is the topic of peace talks. Second, Santos has offered FARC to discuss with them very tough issues of the national agenda, such as the rural development. We never discuss with terrorist groups any point of the national agenda. Third, we never granted these groups impunity. One thing is to have shorter sentences, and the other thing is to offer them impunity. We never granted these groups political rights for them to become eligible. Therefore, there are many differences.
There have been ongoing accusations and investigations into what was called parapolitics in Colombia, an alleged conspiracy between politicians and the paramilitaries during your administration. Haven't several officials, including your second cousin, Senator Mario Uribe, been put in jail?
Many have been put in jail because of collusion before my administration. The Justice Administration ruled, introduced the rules in regarding facts that took place before my administration. And there could be fair accusations, and there are many unfair accusations. And I can understand that because of our policy on security, the Justice Administration moved forward with these investigations. What I cannot understand is why the Justice Administration has not advanced in investigating the collusion between lefty guerrillas, terrorist lefty guerrillas, and politicians.
So you say there has been that kind of collusion as well? Do you know
of course,
which politicians are involved?
Without investigation. It remains in impunity.
Now, were you president when the National Intelligence Agency was accused of illegal surveillance against Supreme Court justices?
It was not our administration. It was the penetration of criminals that we inherited, because criminals had penetrated many institutions in Colombia. When we began the presidency, the one third of the country was in the hands of paramilitary groups, the second third in the hands of guerrillas, and the other third was in danger. Therefore, our Colombia advanced a lot, made a lot of significant progress during our administration. We did not solve all the problems, but we planted good seeds, and President Santos has harvested these good seeds in security, at the same time in investment promotion, and in advancing in social cohesion. For instance, my administration left out of poverty 13 million Colombians. For my concern is because President Santos has abandoned these policies.
I saw a report that said that a third of the 2002 Congress and half of your coalition in the Senate have come under criminal investigation for alleged paramilitary ties.
I was elected as independent candidate. I was not congressional support, and I created a coalition once after having been elected, and all the laws enacted by administration were very positive for the country. Of course, I have already explained to you that those who are in jail are under investigation. They are because of facts, because before my administration. And what remains in impunity, I repeat, is the collusion between guerrillas and politicians. And let's consider this, please. Colombia has lost the institutional power in many places of the territory.
Well, you say one-third was controlled by FARC, one by the paramilitaries, and one-third was threatened by both.
In danger.
That's
yes. It was the real life in my country at the moment we arrived to the presidency.
When you became president, you know, in this country that was mired in violence and poverty, you write in your book that the reality of just how bad things were became clear. You hadn't realized how bad they were before you became president?
I had suffered the difficulties in my country, but I never thought that my country was a failing state. And during the first months of the administration, many people from the multilateral agencies came to visit me at the office, and they told me, you have to be aware because this country is becoming a failure state. Therefore, in some degree, we rescue the country. But remember, there were three policies. Security with democratic values. Investment promotion with social responsibility. And the third one, social cohesion. We advance a lot in education, in health, etc.
Had the Medellin drug lords been largely rendered toothless at this point?
During the 90s, the Medellin cartel was dismantled.
Mm-hmm. Escobar was already in.
He was killed by the armed forces at the very beginning of the 90s. And during our administration, we dismantled other drug cartels throughout the country. And we advanced a lot in recovering security in Medellin, as we did in many areas of the country. Remember, the day of our inauguration, the congressional building where I went to take the oath received many bombs from FARC. And
people were surprised that they'd gotten past security so easily.
No, because the terrorists launched the bullets, the weapons from outside the building. And these weapons cross over the roof of the building and kill on the next street 22 people, and many resulted injured. President Santos, 8 years later, took the oath in the middle of one very optimistic Colombia. If you go to know how the country changed, the only thing you have to do is to compare President Santos' inauguration and our inauguration 8 years before.
Compare it in what way?
Because at the moment of our inauguration, the inauguration was in the middle of violence. Mm-hmm. At the moment of President Santos' inauguration, the inauguration was in the middle of optimism. The country was very enthusiastic with security, with investment, with the advancement in social cohesion. And the vast majority of the voters who went to the ballots to vote for President Santos, they did so because they wanted the continuation of our policies.
My guess is Álvaro Uribe Vélez, who was president of Colombia between 2002 and 2010, and as he points out, during his presidency, violence fell to the lowest levels in recent memory as the country achieved important military victories against the FARC, dismantled paramilitary groups, and experienced something of a financial boom. His book is called No Lost Causes. It is published by the Penguin Press, and we will continue our conversation.
You know how many?
We're going to take a break. We'll come back.
Okay, thank you, Leonard.
We are back with Álvaro Uribe Vélez, the former president of Colombia. He's written a memoir called No Lost Causes. It is released in this country by the Penguin Press. Before that, the election that brought you to the presidency, we had Ingrid Betancourt here as a guest. She was kidnapped. Other people were kidnapped. In fact, early on in your presidency, you made a rescue attempt for two captive local political officials, Guillermo Gaviria Correa and Gilberto Echeverri. Did that change your what happened there? Did that change your attitude about how you wanted to deal with FARC?
I made a decision, and I announced the decision before my election, that my government was going to look how to release the hostages and at the same time how to defeat kidnapping. Release the hostages, but not to promote kidnapping. And we had sad moments and happy moments. One very sad moment is when we failed in our attempt to rescue Guillermo Gaviria, the governor of my province, who had been kidnapped with Gilberto Echeverri, a former minister of defense before my administration. And we failed, and I assumed all the responsibility. I said, I am the only one accountable. And happy moments when we could rescue Madame Betancourt and other hostages.
During that time, you and your family were also under constant threats by the guerrillas. How did they deal with it? How did you deal with it? The stress must have been just terrible.
Yes, and my family has suffered the same that 50 than half of the Colombian families. My father was killed in one attempt of kidnapping.
By FARC?
By FARC. My brother severely injured. And, of course, my family has suffered a lot, as many Colombian families. And I have suffered many attempts against my life. But this is one of the engines for me to remain in politics until the last day of my life, as I have begged to Jesus.
So when you came to power, you were faced with violence and a failing economy. What did you focus on first?
Three pillars at the same time: to defeat violence, to promote investment, and to advance in social cohesion, because we were in need to show Colombians that our policy was with soldiers, but at the same time with investment, and at the same time with social opportunities. And we advance a lot. For instance, in security, it is very important that you keep in mind this. My government was the first one in Colombia fighting the paramilitary organization, and the first one effectively fighting guerrillas. We dismantled the paramilitary organization. 14 kingpins of this organization were extradited by my government to the United States. Out of more than 100 extradited narcotraffickers to this country.
Why do you think Colombia has had so many problems in the past? It has a population that is reputed to speak the best Spanish of any country in the world, even better than the people in Spain. I don't know if that's true or not, but a relatively educated population. And yet there's been corruption. There have been all sorts of other problems. There have been two major terrorist uprisings. Is cocaine
Of course, but Colombia has had a lot of problems because our democratic-oriented government thought that it was possible to overcome these problems only by talking. And my government introduced security with all the determination. But look at this. Colombia is the oldest democracy in the region. Colombia has never defaulted. Colombia has never suffered hyperinflation. Colombia is a country of democratic value, of institutions. And if at the moment we left office 2 years ago, the mood of the Colombian people was a mood of optimism.
Some people believe you went into politics to seek revenge for the murder of your father. If not revenge, at the very least, was that a turning point in your political career?
Never, because...
You did free Madame Betancourt, as you point out.
I began my political career in my childhood, going in the hands of my mother to accompany her in her fight for the political rights of women in my country. And the assassination of my father is a reason of sadness forever for my family and for me, but never a feeling of revenge, because with a feeling of revenge, it is impossible to host the idea of being president.
So what was needed to lift the country up fiscally? Your plan involved a tax on the wealthy, something that there are a lot of people in this country opposed to. If you look at what's happening in places like Spain and Greece, where austerity measures are so unpopular with the people, how did you make your economic measures more palatable for Colombians at a time of economic recession?
The problem I see in Spain and in Greece is that they did not introduce these measures at the right time. It is quite late. For I am pro-austerity. In my government, we proceed like this. We introduce a new tax to be paid by the wealthiest people for security. At the same time, we gain many incentives for investors, incentives for investments. And at the same time, we reduced, we shrank the payroll a lot because we think it is necessary to have austerity in the government. Otherwise, the government's wasting money. Now we have the mirror of Europe, and the correction is quite difficult. For I continue speaking in Colombia for the necessity to having an austere government at the right time.
Was it okay? Did the wealthy react negatively when you raised their taxes?
I have to be fair. No one rejected a tax. All the opposite. Many people approached me and told me, Mr. President, I have wealth. I have real estate. I have no liquidity to pay the tax. However, I am taking a loan to pay the tax because we trust you. And we, as the book states, we advance from one short victory to the other short victory. And people had credibility in us. And at the same time, we introduce incentive. For instance, one of the decisions made by administration one, whoever invests in Colombia $1, he had the possibility to deduct 30 cents. It was incentives under the condition of making the investment.
Well, during your presidency, the U.S. Congress would not ratify the free trade agreement with Colombia because of what they said was a poor human rights record, despite your very good relationship with a number of presidents in the White House.
It was quite difficult to negotiate the agreement. My administration negotiated the agreement, but it was not the only one. We negotiated the agreement with Canada, with the European Union, with the many South American countries, etc. Colombia was very close, was not integrated to the world economy. And look at this. At the very beginning of our administration, before our administration, there were years when in Colombia more than 300 members of the unions or the labor unions were killed by year. During at the end of our administration, 20. We wanted zero, but we saw a huge improvement in impunity. At the beginning of our administration, there was one killer in jail. At the end of our administration, more than 200. The Organization of American, the International Labor Organization in Geneva, said that Colombia for first time was left out of the non-complaint countries list. There is a list released every year by this organization, and in this list, this organization includes the non-complaint countries. And for first time, after having been in this list for more than 23 years, Colombia was excluded from the list because of our performance in human rights regarding the labor unions.
Some observers see a serious threat to democracy today in a number of Latin American countries, with presidents like Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Ecuador's Rafael Correa, Bolivia's Evo Morales, and Nicaragua's Daniel Ortega. Although all of them were democratically elected, they are seen as somewhat authoritarian rulers. What's your analysis of that threat?
I agree, because there are elections. But at the same time, Chavez has expropriated 60% of the gross national product.
Why do you think the public still returns him to office with 54% of the vote, despite the fact that there seems to have been so much dissatisfaction?
Because he has introduced social decisions that have been very convenient for the poorest people. My question is that these decisions are not sustainable in the long term without private investment, even with a great number of reserves, the great amount of oil reserves that Venezuela has.
But that's the largest in the world right now.
Of course. And I have other disagreements. Chavez has been accomplice of the Colombian terrorist groups, and now he shows up, he blabs as the promoter of peace talks in Colombia, and I disagree with this. And I cannot agree with the government expropriating the private sector. It is necessary to give everyone possibilities for being creative. But you, if you expropriate the private sector, as Castro did in Cuba, or Chavez is doing in Venezuela, therefore what you do is to eliminate creativity.
Well, in the past, in South America, we saw, and in Central America, we saw many right-wing dictatorships. Now we're seeing a number of leftist authoritarian governments. Do you think it's just a pendulum swinging back and forth?
It could be, but they have in common this. These dictators crack down the media, the same the authoritarian rulers do. Dictators abolish independent institutions, so do the new rulers.
Now, you're barred from running for the presidency again by the Colombian Constitution. Are you going to get back in politics in some way?
I haven't left politics because I do politics without the necessity of being candidate.
You, by tweeting and such.
This is one of my daily activity.
And, of course, writing books like this one, No Lost Causes.
You know what is the reason for this book?
Well, you have to tell me very quickly.
All the income from this book is going to support, sponsor a new nonprofit university.
Alvaro Uribe Vélez, his book, No Lost Causes, from the Penguin Press. Thank you so much.
Thank you.